Welcome to the Hoban Minute, a podcast that will shift your perspective on the business, politics, and culture of the hemp and marijuana industries. I'm your host, Xavier Jaye. It's 420 somewhere, so let's dive in. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Hoban Minute. I'm your host, Xavier Jaye, and I'm joined today by my good friend, Bob Hoban. How you doing today, Bob?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today? It's good to be here.
It is good to be here. I'm doing good. We got some cold weather, and I'm excited for today's discussion with Dr. Michael Steward, the Chief Medical Officer of Entourage. How are you doing today, Dr. Michael?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Fantastic. Glad to hear that. And before we get into some of the details, where are you joining us today from?
I'm actually in McKinney, Texas. So it's been a beautiful day here. Our cold snap has gone away.
Cold snap, yeah. Not much of a cold snap in Texas. Although I did grow up in Austin. I remember one year there was some snow on the ground and the whole city shut down for about 2 days.
No snow this year, just cold weather.
That's good. That's good. Well, we're really excited to have you on today. You know, I think this is going to be a nice refresher of a conversation. We've been on a trend of certainly focusing more on regulatory policy and business discussions over the last few months, it seems. But today we're going to discuss a little bit more of a different perspective on cannabis, and that is, you know, the medicinal side of things. You're a doctor, and you've been advocating for, you know, the use and the benefits of cannabis as a plant medicine for many years now. And so I'm excited to get into some of the details of your journey here and kind of what you're doing currently. Do you want to maybe lay out a little bit for us your history and background, your expertise, and kind of what has brought you, you know, to this space?
Sure. I actually come from a family of business folks, and they thought I was a little crazy when I decided I wanted to go into medicine. I don't come from a long family history of physicians. In fact, we were involved in fastening systems for the automotive industries. And the way that I was attracted into medicine is I wound up being a part of fire rescue. I was a volunteer firefighter for a while and then actually paid for a while. And most of the work that I did with fire rescue was medical. I was trained as an EMT and eventually wound up teaching paramedicine and fire science. And it was really through my involvement that direction that I decided I was going to go back to school and get my pre-medical requirements done and go back to medical school. So I had a degree in economics, and I was playing kind of as a ski bum for a year or two, and then went back to college, picked up my pre-medical requirements, and then went to the University of Colorado Health Sciences Center, and was eventually board certified in family practice, although the majority of the work that I did was in HIV care. I started doing HIV care in the 90s, really before there was a protocol out. In fact, I started doing it when I was in residency, but not earnestly until I was out into private practice. And when I started doing HIV care, medications called protease inhibitors were in expanded access and readily became available. And they really changed the whole playing field of how HIV was approached and treated. And so I became very experienced in bringing novel therapies into clinical practice. And although I stopped doing HIV care probably about 2003, I got a lot of experience bringing novel therapies into clinical practice. And I was not using cannabis or medical marijuana back then. My practice was in Colorado, and I had multiple requests for writing letters of medical necessity for marijuana. And that's one of the times that I allowed my attorney to practice medicine. And I was advised that I should not be doing that. At the time, my office was the only office in the state of Colorado that had advertised as being gay and lesbian friendly. The Amendment 2 issue was looming over our heads. And my attorney said that I should not raise that red flag. And so I didn't study cannabinoid medicines earnestly until about a decade ago. And I knew that my clients who were using medical marijuana were doing well, and I had a large HIV practice. We had about 1,200 people that we knew were HIV positive that we were following. So this was a large group of people. And I certainly saw enough to see that medical marijuana wasn't hurting anybody who was using it in my practice and was probably helping them out. About a decade ago, when I had an opportunity to make a business investment into a medicinal marijuana company in the state of California, I really started doing my research, and I discovered the endocannabinoid system, which I actually was not taught in medical school. And that system explained to me why cannabis can help so many different ailments in the human body and why it can do so effectively, because we co-evolved with this plant. So once I started studying the endocannabinoid system earnestly, I was hooked on cannabis as medicine. And I wound up being the medical director of a recreational marijuana company in California for a while. They went, they were a medicinal marijuana company, went recreational when California went that direction. So my expertise there was not needed, and eventually co-founded Endorage with another person who had been working in the medical marijuana industry, and then also with somebody who had a very significant banking background who also was involved in the cannabis industry in Oregon. And we really felt that we could do at least 95% of the medicinal work of the cannabis plant, and that we could do it with industrial hemp, a federally legal part of the plant. So cannabis is both hemp and marijuana. The legal definition or distinction between the two of them is just that. It's legal. It's the amount of THC in the plant. It really doesn't go into any of the other cannabinoids, terpenes, or flavonoids. So that might have been kind of a long answer. I'll let you redirect me here.
No, doctor, that is a great background, and we appreciate that. And, you know, one of the things you mentioned was, you know, you only started studying the endocannabinoid system and medical cannabis 10 years ago, but that is a lifetime worth of knowledge compared to your point with most practitioners that have never learned that there is such a thing as the endocannabinoid system, that somehow, some way, the endocannabinoid system and the fact that it's a system within our body designed, in effect, to create or maintain homeostasis, that's laughed off in many mainstream circles as being foolish or baseless or not scientific, but we certainly know it is, and hopefully from the medical education system that's a change. But what I really wanted to key in on is the use of the word medical marijuana or medical cannabis, because in the U.S. when we talk about medical cannabis, we're really talking about what qualifies the purchaser, right? And not to take away for a second the fact that cannabis has a variety of therapeutic and medical benefits. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the term medical marijuana is used to describe a construct where it qualifies a purchaser on the other end to be accepted or exempted from criminal penalties. Whereas in Europe, in Latin America, and other jurisdictions, medical marijuana really means medical. You've got researchers, you've got mainstream institutions looking at it, researching it, investing in it, moving this to the next level. But in the United States, despite all of our technology and our great wealth of minds, particularly in the medical community, we're talking about medical marijuana, but there's really nothing medical about the system we've developed. Could you comment on that a little bit, agree or disagree?
Well, I can certainly agree with that perspective. It's a very valid perspective, and it's one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing. In fact, Endorage, the company that I work with, we've brought through a phase 4 post-marketing study in humans through the Institutional Review Board system, posted on clinicaltrials.gov, fully compliant in its enrollment. It's been completed and published in a peer-reviewed manuscript. that is sort of the gold standard for medical research in the United States and other countries. So there are people out there doing that type of research, and I am one of them. And I also agree with you wholeheartedly that right now what we call medicinal cannabis in the United States is a joke, because to have medicinal cannabis, you really need a system where you have folks who are practitioners and knowledgeable about the endocannabinoid system, how the plant interacts with that, so that you can actually utilize this plant appropriately. You know, there are hundreds and hundreds of different chemovars of this plant, or different strains of this plant, and every single strain is really a different medicine in and of itself. So there are chemovars that can make you hungry when you use them. There are chemovars that make you feel satiated. You know, we can increase your anxiety with this plant, or we could attenuate your anxiety with the plant. So I agree wholeheartedly that the system that we have really is not one where we have practitioners that are well trained in either the endocannabinoid system or cannabis medicines. And those who are well trained have a difficult time in getting products that are clinician grade, so that they know that this is a clean product. It has been grown and harvested in an appropriate way, which is incredibly important for cannabis because it's a phytoremediator, and it will take impurities out of the soil. It's a beautiful way that you can clean up your soil, but you don't want to use the same plant that cleans your soil to be your medicine. So the system that we have right now in the United States, I would have to agree with you, is just one where if you live in a certain area, you have permission to be able to use this plant without any legal ramifications, or at least very few. And as far as having a system where you can buy the products, and that those products are consistent and well manufactured, and that you can find practitioners who know how to use them, the United States is not doing a great job yet.
It certainly isn't. And I really like the use of your term there, chemovars. That's a new one that I'm going to have to adopt and borrow a little bit in my daily life. But actually, you know, you mentioned the study that you were performing, and let's jump into a little detail on that. As I understand it, it's related to long-term COVID effects and, you know, the potential relief derived, I guess, from cannabinoid products. And so maybe you can jump into some detail on that study and the results, and kind of what's next for that.
Well, it actually, that whole product came out that in March of, gosh, it had to be 2020 now. I was still am a licensed physician. I had a lot of experience working with RNA viruses because I did HIV care for many years. And I was called by a center that was near my home in California when I had that, and asked if I would come back to that area and work in their COVID center that was also run by the folks that handled their HIV care. And so they knew who I was and what my experience was. And so I agreed to do that. And when I started doing my continuing medical education to treat COVID, and I started vetting some of the sources and finding out the inflammatory markers that we were following, I recognized that I could be much more productive by putting together a formulation that could attenuate the symptoms of COVID with the plant that I was already working with than to be a COVID doc. Although I did all of my continuing medical education and was set up to be able to do remote visits, they wound up not being as busy as they thought they were going to be. So it wound up being fine that I wasn't one of their alternate docs to help out. And sure enough, I actually wrote a white paper about how cannabis and or its constituents could attenuate the inflammatory markers that we were following in acute COVID. And then we came across, Endurage, my company, came across a group of people that summer that were calling themselves long haulers. These were folks who had gotten COVID and just weren't recovering the way they were expected to. And back in the summer of 2020, these folks were not being treated very well by the medical system. They were being told this was in their heads and, you know, go home, get over it, all sorts of things that probably weren't the most appropriate treatment for them. And I wound up putting together, with help from my team, a 10-week podcast where we I would talk to folks for about 10 or 15 minutes, and it wound up being groups of maybe 15 to 30 people, as I recall. And I'd talk for, you know, about 10, 15 minutes, and then it was question and answer. And so that's how I got to know the people with long COVID. And after spending some time with them and the symptoms they had, it was pretty clear to me that our formulation that we could make would attenuate the symptoms of long COVID. And so we put together a formulation to help with that and put it out on the market. And some folks bought it about a few months after it had been out on the market. Our chief revenue officer went and found about 20 people or 25 people who had used the product. Turned out about half of them had used it for long COVID. And when he talked to them about their experiences, not only did everyone have improvement, and everybody had improvement in about 7 days, people started crying on the phone because they finally had found something that was working. And so we took that very strong signal that we had, and we wrote up a clinical trial, went through the, you know, institutional review board full approval process, went up on clinicaltrials.gov, enrolled the study, and that is now a study we have published in a peer-reviewed manuscript. So we have a formulation that does attenuate the symptoms of post-acute COVID syndrome. And it's peer reviewed. It is, you know, we've passed the safety information that was required to put this into a clinical trial, and we're effective. We actually helped 8 out of 9 symptoms. So that's very exciting for me. We do work through practitioners because one of the things that we found doing this trial is that people who have long COVID, for them to get better in the most effective way that we know, they have to have a practitioner that they're working with. And so we're not a magic bullet. We don't market directly to people saying we've got the cure for COVID. We market to the people that are treating long COVID, and then they will select our product if they feel it's appropriate for their clients.
No. You're not hijacking anything. Believe me, this is all fantastic information. That's exactly why we're having you on the call. You know, your wealth of knowledge that we certainly have not tapped into yet. I think it's pretty fascinating that you're, you know, to Bob's point, you seem to be following kind of more traditional medicinal standards and practices when it comes to the distribution of your products and kind of how you're
and more importantly, Xavier, he's done it the right way. I mean, you know, and Doctor, you remember this in the early days of COVID, every CBD producer you could find, well, this is an overstatement, but they're putting products online and saying this cures COVID or this addresses the symptoms of COVID. And of course, you can't go do that unless you've gone through the process or a process such as what you've gone through. So kudos to you. And you did talk a little bit too about hitting the ground running in 2023. I'm sure that this human study and the resulting product will keep you busy. But what other things do you have going on in 2023 that keeps you so busy?
You know, certainly the long COVID is the biggest need that's out there right now for the most of the people. But I am really excited about other products that we already have available and already are studying. One of them, for example, we call OER, and that stands for opioid enhancement and reduction. That particular product is designed for people who need to be on opioid narcotics, either short-term or long-term. Really, that one was designed, we're working with a physiatrist in the Denver area who does treat pain. And he treats many people who are taking more than 200 morphine milligram equivalents per day. That's a lot of narcotic. And these folks are in chronic pain. It's significant pain to be on hundreds of milligrams of morphine equivalent a day. And there is pressure to get those morphine equivalent doses down because we know that people don't live that long when they're on these high doses of opioid narcotics for long periods of time, and the quality of life is not fantastic either. And so we put together a product, and so far we've not adjusted the product yet, but we have about a 33% reduction in opioid narcotic use while increasing functionability. So increasing people's function and maintaining their pain levels where they were. So this product was not designed to be a pain medication, and it was not designed to get people off of opioid narcotics, although a couple people did stop those. The product is designed for people to be able to reduce the amount of opioid narcotic that they are taking. Thereby, you reduce the cost, you reduce the side effects. But in combining a full flower cannabis product with an opioid narcotic, we can make that narcotic more effective. We can reduce dependency. We can help if we're withdrawing somebody from that opioid narcotic, and we make it safer. So it's a cost-effective way to help people get down into the recommended areas of how much of an opioid narcotic they can make. I'm really excited about that product, and I'm very excited about a very different product that people confuse all of the time. And the next product is one that can be used in any kind of substance abuse. We have parts and animal models which suggest that this will help reduce drug-seeking behavior across many different substances, and that is a product that's designed for people who want to abstain from using drugs and alcohol. And it is designed to be used within a treatment program, and we do have a clinical trial designed and ready to go on that. We're waiting for bandwidth and funding. So those are two that I'm really excited about. We have products that are available right now that help with anxiety and sleep, which I think is a pretty common thing for people to use cannabis products for. Certainly all of our products are, they're rich in the phytocannabinoids as well as terpenes and flavonoids. So any one of our products will balance our endocannabinoid system if it's out of balance.
And that's super important for these products. And I think that's, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned kind of specifically some of the formulations and the ingredients that you're taking from cannabis and including these products and kind of how they're, you know, creating these seemingly, I mean, miraculous is a crazy word, but, you know, pretty impressive results when it comes to, you know, the patient experience and kind of the results of the medicine again.
The miraculous part about the results that we get from the cannabis plant is that, you know, for example, when I was going through the different inflammatory markers and how cannabis or its constituents could attenuate those inflammatory markers, you know, I'm going through and I'm doing the study to find out what are the parts of this plant that seem to be helpful in this certain area, and then what are the parts of the plant that seem to be helpful in another area. And then with cannabis, it does not like to be taken apart and Frankensteined back together reason. I thought it would, but the cannabis plant doesn't.
No, and I think
so. If you take
that's the, you know, the really what I wanted to ask you about was kind of what I call potency poisoning, essentially, in the cannabis space now, where we're seeing, you know, essentially, you know, certainly more on the recreational side than kind of the quote unquote medicinal side. But we're starting to see this increase in desire from consumers that seem to be lacking relevant education in just seeking the highest potency THC products. Can you speak to maybe some of the adverse effects and kind of the issues that a user might have by consuming such high THC, you know, concentrations?
Well, the THC concentration in the plant has gone up considerably when you look back over the last 100 years, and that's the black market influence that was on the plant. So when we started demonizing the cannabis plant, the people who were continuing to grow it and quote-unquote market it were doing it for a recreational market that really wasn't as involved in the medicinal side of the plant. And so we've selected for higher and higher THC chemovars of the plant. But I think when you really go into the dispensaries and you start asking the people who really know what products move, I think you're going to find out that people are already starting to sway back toward a little lower concentration in the THC rather than these super high concentrations that you see talked about in, you know, people have got the prize for the plant that has the most THC. And I'm not against growing these plants for high THC concentrations as long as you keep them as full plants. And once we start to isolate the different components of cannabis and we're not talking about whole flower medicine anymore, that's where you get into problems with the cannabis plant. And that's where you see the abuse, the high THC being used for recreational purposes. That's where, you know, certain medications will have side effects and problems. Marinol, for example, is an isolated synthetic THC. I've written many prescriptions for it, but the majority of the prescriptions I wrote for that particular medication were to confuse the drug testing on my clients who were taking medicinal marijuana and needed to have a medication that confused the drug testing. It's not a particularly good medication. And when you take this plant apart and you concentrate certain portions of it, or you spike a cannabis flower medicine with additional THC or additional botanical terpenes, you're taking away the, you know, Mother Nature's guidance for this plant. And it does not work as well as whole flower medicine, number one. And number two, you introduce side effects. And to date, now, this is a little older information because I wasn't at CanMed this year, but the CanMed conference the year before, in their presentation, they presented an article and there was no information to refute it. There have been no cases of cannabis use disorder in people who are using cannabis for medicinal reasons. And I suspect that is that they're being guided towards the appropriate chemovars of this plant. And at any rate, I'm getting a little bit sidetracked on what
That's exactly it, right? It's the fact that you need kind of all these synergistic chemicals and you know, cannabinoids and terpenes and other things in the plant to work together to create, you know, harmonious effect.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is what's going on with the plant. What we want to be careful with, and one of the reasons why I'm able to go through the institutional review board process and pass their safety criteria, is that I deal with whole plant medicines. Now, our Formula C, for example, that went through this clinical trial, is not just the cannabis plant. I mean, it is just the cannabis plant, but it's four different chemovars of the cannabis plant blended together for their medicinal qualities. And it's not, you know, one part of each. I went through to find the different chemical compositions of the plant that, after doing the research in, you know, what parts of this plant would attenuate the different inflammatory markers, I looked for the plants that were rich in those things. But I also didn't go and say, oh, I'm a little deficient over here in pinene or limonene or linalool or one of the other terpenes that I wanted, and then added that in. I could look and I would say, I need more of this in my formulation. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to select a plant, the whole plant, that is rich in this, and I'm going to blend the whole plants together. And as long as I'm doing that, I am using the wisdom of Mother Nature, and I don't think she makes very many mistakes. That's why I can do this so safely.
That's an excellent way to put it. Gosh, I've got a million questions, but, you know, in the interest of time and while we've got you, I wanted to shift gears slightly and sort of cover this idea of the misinformation surrounding THC, perhaps, and ultimately, you know, many states are tackling these issues of hemp-derived intoxicating cannabinoids, Delta 8, Delta 10, HHC, and the like. I just wanted to get your perspective on it. And again, we don't have a lot of time left, but what is the safety profile of a Delta 8 or a Delta 10 product? And you know, maybe you could just comment some of those misperceptions.
You know, what I can't really comment on is the safety of the things that you're talking about when they're isolated from the cannabis plant or otherwise. And Delta 8 is not found in the cannabis plant in any large quantities. So you're not going to get Delta 8 in whole flower medicine. I think where we're going to have trouble with this plant is when we're talking about isolates, synthetic derivatives, and so when you're taking this plant apart and then you're concentrating certain parts of it, you're isolating them and concentrating them and then putting them back together in ratios that we have made up, that's not necessarily a safe product, even if it came from the cannabis plant. We can take very safe things apart and concentrate them and make them dangerous. And I see that done with the cannabis plant. Where I will really direct people to, and I'm not an expert in the synthetics or the derivatives. My expertise is really focused on the whole plant medicine. And that is a very, very, very safe plant. I mean, come on, we co-evolved with, we have 10,000 years of history working with this plant. And, you know, to date, with certainly with industrial hemp, and people talking about we must save the children from these dangerous hemp products, I would say, show me how these are dangerous. Because quite frankly, I think that whole thing about dangerous and euphoric hemp products is being driven for a different reason than really keeping our children safe. Because to date, I do not have any information in front of me that really shows me that hemp products are dangerous for our kids. If you're going to talk about a Delta 8 that has been, you know, the plant's been manipulated, I'm not going to stand behind any of those. Those are isolates or they are, you know, synthetically derived, and I want to stay away from those as a clinic. I don't have the research on them to show me that they're safe to use.
And I think that's a, you know, very relevant message to kind of summarize what it seems to be your mission in the space, right? Focusing on the whole plant medicine and on the therapeutic side.
We focus on non-euphoric products as well. Mm-hmm. You really can't take, with perhaps the exception of one of ours, and you'd have to really work at trying to get high with it. And if you were able to, quote unquote, get high, you might get some kind of alteration, but you're not going to be really intoxicated. So there's a lot of desire out there in the, at least in the United States and the human race, to be able to alter our states of consciousness because we don't like where we are. I'm assuming it's because we don't like where we are. But any time that we're going to use a product so that we disconnect from our conscious state of being, we're going to have some issues with it. Whether you're using alcohol, whether you're using a food, you know, something relatively non-toxic, when we're using that to escape, we're going to have some problems with use disorders associated with it.
Yes, we are. Well, I think that's a, you know, a relevant message for us to end the conversation on here. So I wanted to give you a chance, Dr. Michael, to, you know, shout out potentially any projects you're working on. I know you mentioned some of the upcoming products you're releasing this year. You mentioned Entourage, but also where folks can find you if they want to reach out and learn more about what you're doing.
Well, they, you know, our website is really designed more for clinicians than it is for folks, although I can be reached through that website. It's Entourage.com is the company website, and Entourage is taken for the entourage effect of the cannabis plant and the endocannabinoid system. So we combined the two, it just changed the letter, and we came up with Entourage instead of Entourage. And it is happens to be spelled End Our Age. So ENDOURAGE is the name of the company, and .com gets us to the website. If anybody, you know, is going to the website and they're looking at purchasing products, if they purchase it through their clinician, they will get a discount. It doesn't say that directly on the website. But we encourage people to work with their medical provider. And so we actually, if a medical provider will contact us and say, I want to use your products in my patient population, we give them a code so that their patients get 50% off. And that's a good savings. And so I think it's worth people's time. But my work is primarily through the company now. I don't really, you know, write things independently anymore or do that kind of stuff. And I don't do independent consultations anymore. I'm now involved in the production of cannabis-based medicines. So legally, I'm not allowed to prescribe, recommend, or individually advise about cannabis-based products. And I do agree with that. And we mentioned before this that, you know, when it comes to cannabis, please don't ask me if you should use it. Just ask me how. I think this plant can benefit just about everybody who is on this earth. And I think I can guide them on how to do it. So I'm not the right person to ask if I should use this. If you're supposed to use cannabis and you haven't found the right practitioner, I can probably guide you to the right person, show you how to use it. But I'm going to tell you to use it because it has so many beautiful things it can do for our bodies in keeping our endocannabinoid systems balanced.
Boom. And that's a mic drop, Dr. Michael. That is a perfect way to wrap up the episode here. You know, I think the messaging and the topics we covered today were great. Really appreciate you joining us. And I'm looking forward to maybe having you on again in the future.
Yeah, if you need me, reach out. This type of information is very easy for me because I don't have to study and prepare for it.
We love it. Well, you've said it all. Thanks again. And we look forward to reconnecting again real soon.
I appreciate your help. And yeah, do what you can to keep this plant moving forward in an appropriate way.
I'll try and play our parts. Thanks, Dr. Michael.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another enlightening conversation. If you liked what you heard, hit that subscribe button to get all future episodes fresh out of the studio. Suggestions for topics or guests for the show, please send them to hello@bobhoban.com. And as always, thanks to Benzinga for powering the Hoban Minute.